If you're feeling exhausted, puffy, anxious, foggy, gaining weight, or just not like yourself, you're not imagining it. Women in their 30s, 40s, and 50s are experiencing massive hormonal shifts, and no one is explaining what's actually happening. I'm Katie Whalen, co-founder of Joy. I built Joy because I lived this. The fatigue, the mood swings, the weight changes, the confusion. Your symptoms are biological, not personal. And AI-generated lab reports won't fix them. Every Joy lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who specializes in women's hormones and connects every biomarker to how you feel. Energy, metabolism, mood, sleep, skin, weight, everything. Then, we personalize real solutions. Hormone therapy, peptide therapy, supplements, and lifestyle protocols. Get started at joyandblogues.com today. This month, new customers get 50% off labs, and you can add our estrogen face cream for just $1 with clinician approval. Use promo code podcast at joyandblokes.com.
Hello from Board Developer. It's Business Ahas, a show about the eureka moment that launched you into the next level of success. I'm here with your host, Jim Hayden, and I'd like to welcome our fabulous guest this month, Lawrence Taylor. Lawrence Taylor's a C-suite financial executive, advisor, and board member with experience in highly regulated industries, including casino gambling, biotechnology, healthcare, and food manufacturing. With extensive experience in Chapter 11 and distress situations, he thrives in leading companies and boards through acquisitions, complex restructurings, and strategic initiatives. We absolutely must know his insights and his business aha. Take it away, Jim.
My gosh, Danny, thank you so much for a great introduction of LT. I had the opportunity to meet LT some time ago, and we've really become fast friends. It's been really delightful to be able to spend quality time with another person that really believes in kind of fundamental ethics, as you do, on business and in life, and making a difference in people's lives. And LT also and I have been playing pool together, so it's been fascinating. I call him my pool shark. He doesn't like that, but as a professional pool player, he's been really instrumental in improving my game. So there's a plug for LT on your second calling of being a professional pool instructor, right?
Yeah, that's a professional pool player is a bit of a stretch, but I enjoy the game and I played it for far too many years. I know just enough to be a little bit dangerous.
Yeah. we're also joined today from our co-producers, both Carrie Sleaser and Danny Kahn. Excited to have both of you both on with us as normal for our business aha moments. And just as a reminder, our business ahas that we do, I obviously know the people that are invited to be our guests, but I do not know their aha. So the very first time that I hear the aha is with everybody else that's hearing it for the very first time. So I'm incredibly excited, elated, excited to hear yours, LT. And with that, take it away.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's always good to see you, Jim. Spend time with you. It's pretty interesting. I've given this a fair amount of thought, and my first business aha moment was not actually a business moment. It turned out to be a business moment over the years, and it's something I've utilized my entire life and up to this very day, if you will. It occurred when I was about 7 or 8. I think, Jim, you may know both my parents were school teachers, which is both a blessing and a curse. I'm not sure I would wish that on any young kid, but I remember having conversations with my parents about being shy about raising my hand and asking questions in school, and, you know, for a whole host of reasons. You know, when you're 7 or 8, you're a little bit self-conscious and you know, you're worried about what people think of you, what your classmates may think of you. And I remember my parents, I distinctly remember, we were in the kitchen table. We were having this conversation and my parents looked at me and they went, well, you know, son, you can only be so smart. Now, that's a tough lesson. That's a tough thing to hear when you're 8. You kind of go, wait, what do you mean? And they were like, at some point, you know, everybody runs out of their ability to be smart. You can blame us, you can blame genetics, you can blame whatever you want, but everybody can only be so smart. Mm-hmm. However, you can always be curious. And curiosity is better than being smart. And I ended up having this weird sense of wonder and curiosity about the world and about the surroundings. And I got over this fear of asking questions, because most of us don't ask questions in a group setting, particularly as we get older, for, you know, fear of disrupting the meeting or prolonging the meeting, or the worst one of all, fear of not being perceived as not smart, as not understanding what's happening in the room. And we've all been there. But I learned to overcome that fear at a very early age, because my parents told me I could only be so smart, but you can always ask a question. And if you continually ask questions, you will continue to learn, you will continue to grow. And that's a mantra, if you will, I've carried with me my entire business career. And it's actually, I think, served me pretty well over the years.
So the aha moment at the ripe age of 7 turned into your aha moment for the rest of your career to be able to be curious and ask the question.
Exactly. I have no shame whatsoever about raising my hand in a meeting if I don't understand something or if I need more clarification. There is no shame on my part in terms of raising my hand, because I was raised in an environment with both my parents being school teachers where the only bad questions are questions that don't get answered or don't get asked. I'm sorry.
Fair. Now, remind me, Curious George, did he always get in trouble?
Yes.
I think I'm just remembering the books as a kid of Curious George and him getting in trouble because he was so curious. And also, I don't know why, because this also contradicts your comment. When I grew up as a kid, on our wall was our green telephone. Mm-hmm. And it had a rotary dial, and it had a cord on it that was probably 25 feet long. So my mom could be in the kitchen and be on the phone. And directly below the phone was a little plaque about this big. And it said, quote, "It's better to remain silent and thought a fool than to speak up and remove all doubt."
I agree with that to a certain point, because I think that the context of that is around making statements, not around asking questions.
And when you say asking questions, you know, the question that you don't ask is the question that needs to be asked. And I think it's also to be thoughtful with the questions as well. I think don't ask questions to be heard, but ask questions to understand.
You're absolutely right. I think the questions should be insightful. They should be thought-provoking. They should promote conversation and discussion and a certain robustness to the table. They should never be condescending or confrontational or anything like that. It should come from a genuine place of wanting to understand and wanting to move the ball forward. Because if you don't truly understand an issue or what your options are, then you're kind of stuck in the water from a company standpoint. I mean, I spent some time in what I like to call the Byzantine world of financial restructuring. And there are only about 4 or 5 reasons why any company ends up in financial distress. And it doesn't matter if you're a $5 million company or a $5 billion company. And when my firm would get engaged and we would meet with boards or C-suite folks, I was always amazed that as this company was traveling down this path of potentially ending up in financial distress, the questions that did not get asked in those meetings, be they very complex questions or very simple questions where somebody just raised their hand and went, "I'm sorry, I really don't understand this. And I'm not sure this is really a good idea." And those questions, which are essential, I think, to a highly functioning company and a highly functioning board, they need to get asked. And a lot of times, you know, for a whole host of reasons, you know, ego, hubris, not wanting to be perceived a certain way, those questions don't get asked to the detriment of not only everybody around the table, but potentially the detriment of the entire company.
That makes logical sense. And I would also, you know, make the statement in the boardroom, you have a responsibility to ask questions. You have a responsibility, at times you have a responsibility to ask the hard questions.
I would take it one further than that. I think you have a mandate as a board member. I mean, that's part of the reason why you're in the room, is to provide perspective and to provide optionality. And I think the way you get to better solutions, better optionality, if you will, is to ask better questions.
That's interesting. I've not heard the word mandate before. So it's such a strong word. But I don't disagree. I don't disagree, because all too often you'll sit in a boardroom and we'll leave a board meeting and then we'll do our survey. And this has happened more than once. Mm-hmm. The survey is I've come back and three of the five board members say, you know, I was thinking about the third item on the agenda. I don't think I agree with that anymore. And then I say, well, why didn't you bring that up in the board meeting? And luckily, you know, we do the post board meeting surveys to be able to assess those questions, or sometimes those issues just don't get brought up. So it's interesting that after people think about things a little bit longer, but also when I mentioned earlier that when you do ask questions to be, and you mentioned this as well about being thoughtful, but really stressing the point of don't ask questions just to be heard.
Exactly.
And what is the reason why you're asking the question? You know, what's the reason why you're, I hate saying the term picking at the scab, but sometimes you got to pick at the scab a little bit. And it's not always fun when you do that in an organization. And when you do, it isn't always, you know, good conversations to have, but they're conversations that you really need to have.
I totally agree.
Now, have you noticed when you were then a teen and then into your 20s, by having this kind of newfound belief that you could ask questions and be curious and it you wouldn't be passed judgment upon, that it didn't work out that way?
I think there have been times when, you know, asking questions or my curiosity had rubbed people the wrong way. Was never my intent. But I genuinely ask 99% of my questions from a place of either deep curiosity and or ignorance, where I just want to know more or want to understand better. Now, the downside of being curious and asking a lot of questions is that you end up with a lot of different interests, potentially, right? Because everything kind of looks cool. You know, if I want to learn more about pool, oh, I need to ask questions about this. If I want to learn more about golf, I need to ask questions about this. If I want to learn more about business, or as you know, I'm a wood turner, I need to ask questions about that. So, you know, you run the risk of being a little bit all over the board in your curiosity. But I think from a business perspective, it's imperative, and I think it's actually a mandate that we ask thoughtful, insightful questions to get to a better solution.
Interesting. And I don't disagree with you at all. Go ahead, Carrie.
Yeah, I love this. I actually was just talking with a friend recently that I'm often blown away in social.
If you're feeling exhausted, puffy, anxious, foggy, gaining weight, or just not like yourself, you're not imagining it. Women in their 30s, 40s, and 50s are experiencing massive hormonal shifts, and no one is explaining what's actually happening. I'm Katie Whalen, co-founder of Joy. I built Joy because I lived this. The fatigue, the mood swings, the weight changes, the confusion. Your symptoms are biological, not personal. And AI-generated lab reports won't fix them. Every Joy lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who specializes in women's hormones and connects every biomarker to how you feel. Energy, metabolism, mood, sleep, skin, weight, everything. Then, we personalize real solutions. Hormone therapy, peptide therapy, supplements, and lifestyle protocols. Get started at joyandblokes.com today. This month, new customers get 50% off labs, and you can add our estrogen face cream for just $1 with clinician approval. Use promo code podcast at joyandblokes.com.
Social settings by the lack of questions people ask. So my question for you is, how would you go about cultivating curiosity in yourself and the people around you? How do you foster that atmosphere or a culture of curiosity?
You know, Carrie, that's a great question. I don't know if I have a great answer to what is a great question. I think you have to get, I think we, as people, we have to get outside, we have to get out of our own way, right? A lot of times people won't ask a question in a social setting, in a business setting or whatever, because they're concerned about being perceived a certain way, right? Either being nosy or prolonging the meeting, or not being smart or not understanding. And that's an ego issue. And I think we have to get outside of our, we have to get out of our own way, outside of yourself, if you will, in order to foster that environment. And candidly, it's not something that I think comes naturally to a lot of people. I was fortunate in that I was raised in an environment where I didn't have the luxury of coming home and saying, I didn't understand something in school, because the first question would be, well, did you raise your hand and ask a question? If my answer was no, my parents would go, well, that's your fault, right? That's you need to go back and ask a question and find out. But for a lot of people, that inquisitive nature, I think it's in all of us, but I also think we have to figure out a way to manifest that and bring it out. Because I think we're all naturally curious about a lot of different things, be it art, be it politics, be it business, be it culture. We all, I think, have this innate sense of curiosity, and I think we have to put aside our egos and get out of our own way to really be able to access that level of curiosity, because it's fun. I mean, I think learning about new things and learning about people is actually pretty cool. I may not be good at everything, certainly not great at most things, but I think being curious is a lot of fun.
I have a follow-up question for you on that, LT. So when you're in a setting and you notice that you're the one that's asking the questions, and you notice that maybe nobody else is asking questions, have you ever noticed that the direction that ends up going becomes groupthink based upon your questions?
Sometimes, if I'm being honest. Which is, you know, it kind of cuts both ways, because sometimes that groupthink based on, if the groupthink evolves in a way that's productive for the situation, meaning everybody's thought about the questions, everybody's kind of been engaged, then that I think that's a positive, and that's a positive outcome. If the groupthink manifests itself in a way that, you know, only one person is asking questions, and everybody else is going along, I think that runs the risk of basically everybody being silent, which is not good. Because I think one of the outcomes of asking a singular question is that it should invoke more questions from the group. You know, have you thought about this? And then somebody go, well, yeah, I thought about that way, but maybe let me come at it from a different angle and ask a different question. And that, so I think part of what asking questions should do, and particularly in the business group setting, is that it should foster conversation and foster additional questions.
And I would presume that now with your being sage at the world of being curious and asking questions, I would suspect that you would agree that you actually ask questions now because you know the question you're going to ask is going to provoke more questions.
That's my hope. It's not always my intent. So I freely admit sometimes my purpose in asking the question is that I generally just don't know, and I want to know. And there are other times, and I find this happens a lot in some boards that I've sat on, where I will intentionally ask a question in an effort to provoke or elicit other questions or other thoughts or other aspects of a conversation. So there have been times when I've used the tactic of asking the question to promote conversation.
Fascinating.
Do you think there's an element too of having to or practice the art of conversation, and maybe people aren't as, I don't know, good at holding conversations, because there's an element there that maybe if someone's not like a big verbal communicator, they might struggle with that.
I think there's a lot of truth to that, Gary. Not everybody is comfortable in a conversational format. I think, you know, if we're talking from a business perspective and not necessarily a social perspective, from a business perspective, I think it's incumbent upon anybody who's in upper management or C-suite or at the board. Candidly, you have to be comfortable in that environment, in a conversational format or in an inquisitive format, because that's part of why you're there. I think it's difficult for people to ascend to some of those positions if they're not already engaged and comfortable in that level of conversation, that level of questioning.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. It kind of reminds me a little bit of, I can think of like the Challenger explosion, right? That was a situation that I studied from a communication perspective where there was a communication breakdown and nobody was asking direct questions and no one was giving direct answers that wasn't high level engineering language. Yeah, and so you had engineers communicating to C-suite level individuals and there was just like a communication breakdown. And so it's interesting because the role of curiosity is so important in asking questions. And I love that you talk about a lot of companies that are in financial distress, like how did it get this far without anyone asking these questions? So LT, you know, are there any go-to questions that you think like these are questions as a business leader you should be asking on a regular basis or anything like that? Or any go-to questions?
I don't know if they're necessarily go-to questions, but I think as a board member or as a C-suite executive, you know, there are some things you should be cognizant of and maybe asking questions around. You know, like, I'm going to exclude a black swan event, like, you know, like the current COVID situation from that equation. But in terms of, you know, what's going on in the national economy, what's going on in the regional economy, what's going on within, you know, what's happening within the sector or the industry that my company is in? Is there M&A activity going on? Why is there M&A activity going on? You know, who's buying who? What revenues are going down? Whose revenues are going up? And why are they going up or down?
Yeah, and to what extent, how many organizations in your sector are in an M&A environment that are new?
Right.
Are there new players in the world of strategics versus PE or VCs? That are interested in those and those opportunities. That's interesting for you to wrap your head around and I guess to be knowledgeable of your space, right?
Yeah, and there's another piece that always gets overlooked, I think, in a lot of companies, and that's, you know, what's going on with our vendors and suppliers? What's going on in their industries? Is there M&A activity or consolidation or divestitures with our suppliers? And what happens, you know, who are our critical suppliers and what happens if we lose one of our critical suppliers or vendors? Can they be easily replaced? I think these are the sorts of questions that keep me up at night. and I go back to my restructuring background, which is, you know, there are all of these tripwires along the way that could potentially lead to a bad outcome. But if we can identify the tripwires, and a lot of that comes from being inquisitive, we can potentially figure out ways to maneuver around those tripwires and never trigger or hopefully forestall or never trigger a negative event.
That's interesting. It makes logical sense as well. And when you said that about the suppliers, it reminded me we probably have at least a half a dozen clients that their cost of goods sold have all increased based upon the last 12 to 18 months. And because of that, it's been a game changer, especially if they have one supplier for particular product or services in which they offer, it's really hamstrung some organizations. That's interesting. Something else I wanted to mention, LT, is that Carrie and I just finished reading a book together, and in the book, there was this acronym called QBQ, and I wanted to mention it to you because I think it allowed me, so QBQ means question before the question.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the question before the question? I'll use the term, let's back up the train a couple stops. Yeah. Because I want to understand something that's gone on back here. It's kind of led to kind of where we are today. But the QBQ thing, Carrie, has been really fascinating because it, I think it's allowed us to really think about things a little deeper than we normally would. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, too, one of the things that you see often is maybe people don't ask, you know, the question before the question because they have so many assumptions. They fill in what they think the answer is, but unless they ask the question, you know, it's not until they actually ask and they think they know what the answer is that it is totally a huge revelation because it's not at all what the individual thought. So it's interesting kind of that role of assumption and what it plays in curiosity.
Now, I also think there's a corollary to the question before the question. It's kissing cousins, if you will. I worked for a lady once, best boss I've ever had. And she had this unique ability to phrase her statements in the form of a question. And it was completely disarming. Nobody ever saw it coming. But it was a great way to get her point across in the form of a question. And
that's
so that,
fascinating.
That's almost like taking the question one step further.
Sure.
But it also fostered a lot of conversation and a lot of thought and a lot of additional questions in the settings that she was in.
It disarms the situation.
Exactly. Yes.
Wow. What an interesting perspective. I never would have thought about it that way, but it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it was kind of another business aha moment for me, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been great kind of sharing the stage with you and Carrie. I think this has been a lot of fun. You know, my parting comment is curiosity is better than being smart.
And you really kind of process the words that you chose on why you should be curious. That's what makes it cavalier. So my hat's off.
Thank you. This has been a lot of fun.
Super. Until next time, and everybody, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you at the next Business Aha. Take it away, Danny.
Thank you for joining Business Ahas, brought to you by Board Developer. If you enjoyed Lawrence's story and could relate to his business aha moment, please be sure to like, subscribe, follow, and share. All the things we love to do. We really appreciate it.
If you're feeling exhausted, puffy, anxious, foggy, gaining weight, or just not like yourself, you're not imagining it. Women in their 30s, 40s, and 50s are experiencing massive hormonal shifts, and no one is explaining what's actually happening. I'm Katie Whalen, co-founder of Joy. I built Joy because I lived this. The fatigue, the mood swings, the weight changes, the confusion. Your symptoms are biological, not personal. And AI-generated lab reports won't fix them. Every Joy lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who specializes in women's hormones and connects every biomarker to how you feel. Energy, metabolism, mood, sleep, skin, weight, everything. Then, we personalize real solutions, hormone therapy, peptide therapy, supplements, and lifestyle protocols. Get started at joyandblokes.com today. This month, new customers get 50% off labs, and you can add our estrogen face cream for just $1 with clinician approval. Use promo code PODCAST at joyandblokes.com.